Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. We're here to connect the dots between our personal health and our total health environment, the health of our society, the health of our communities, the health of our air, food, water, earth, all of the rest of it, all of the things that we need to live here in our habitat and have a healthy life, that come from beyond the self and connect to our natural environment and our communities. That's what we discuss here on Connect the Dots every week. I'm a health and environmental journalist, and I report on the Huffington Post as well as Alternet. You can find some blogs for me on these and other topics, as well as a terrific archive of our past guests on this show, discussing all different aspects of what it takes to protect, maintain, and preserve our health on not only an individual level, but a community, social, and systemic level as well. And that's the kinds of themes we cover on today's show. Regular listeners will know that I often begin with some actions. We're going to defer those to the end of the program today, and jump right in and speak with our guest. I'm so thrilled to have him on the show. He is Dr. David Carpenter, MD. He's director of the Institute for Health and the Environment at the University of Albany, and he is heading up a wonderful group of physicians, practitioners, healthcare advocates, and health concerned citizens at ConcernedHealthNY.org, Concerned Health Professionals of New York. This group is looking out for our health, specifically in reference to environmentally, toxic environmental inputs that might come to us from the process of fracking. At this recording, it has not yet been approved to enter New York State, and regular listeners will know this is a topic I cover quite frequently. This is a recently launched initiative, and so I'm so thrilled to be able to welcome him today to kind of walk us through all the facets of what we need to be concerned about and what this wonderful organization is doing to protect our health. Welcome to Connect the Dots, Dr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Allison. It's a pleasure to be here.
Basically, this organization came into being this past fall, and for those who regularly listen to the show, where I've covered fracking quite a good deal from various aspects, and I believe I've had another one of, or two of your colleagues on the show, Larissa Derschke, MD, as well as Sandra Steingraber in the past, and we've been talking about the fact that this energy production method called fracking, which we've discussed at great length what that consists of on previous programs that readers, listeners can kind of go back to our archives and kind of tune in on, has more sort of downline impacts than many might realize. And in the context of our discussion today, in the fall of 2012, when we were recording this show, New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo had initiated a look into the health aspects through his Department of Health of the New York State government. So that's what we're going to kind of focus on today, both the health impacts, what this look at them is aiming to reveal, what its upsides and shortfalls may or may not be, and what people can do about it. That's what we'll be talking about today with you, and couldn't be speaking with anyone more dialed in or better informed about this. So, let me first take a step back and just orient our listeners to the kind of work you do, because, it's not every university that has an Institute for Health and the Environment, as the University of Albany, where you teach, does. Can you orient listeners, first of all, a little bit to what that entails, looking into the interconnection between the two?
Well, the Institute for Health and the Environment is a research organization. It has some educational responsibilities as well, but it tries to bring together people from different disciplines to work on common problems. When you take the issue of fracking, for example, you can't consider only the health aspects. You have to consider the economic aspects, the political aspects, the geology of these formations that contain the shale gas and so forth. And so this is a perfect example of where the Institute tries to coordinate among people that are in different departments of the university different government agencies. The Institute has members that are at other universities that work collaboratively with our Institute members. And we try to approach these environmental health questions from a multifaceted perspective to try to get some answers.
That's terrific. You know, it's so interesting because very often when you make any kind of statement of fact, if it's in a realm where science might be considered, people will often say, where's the science? Where's the proof? And so often, over the evolution of science, science has looked deep into very minute, microscopic even effects and interactions in order to get some hard data and mechanisms and identify things that are going on. But science also, I believe, has some kind of calling to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And in our time, that's not so well understood, and it's very much more needed now more than ever when we're living in what's already a complex world made more complex by human civilization and technology, and we don't really know how all of these things interact. So I really salute you and your organization for doing this. What are the kinds of things, I mean, how different does your understanding of science look, for example, when you start looking at the bigger picture of these interactions, as I guess you routinely do?
Well, I certainly try to do that. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right that many scientists are sort of afraid of having their results be important for any reason, except to other scientists. But I feel very strongly that what we do in research should be relevant to human health, should be made available to the broader public, and should be relevant to real-world problems. And so that's what we try to do through the activities of the Institute.
Mm-hmm. So tell us then from that perspective, you know, how you, you said a bit about how you look at something like fracking, a proposed activity coming to our state like fracking. You know, how do you look at it from the perspective of its health risks, for example?
Well, there are probably four major health risks that I'm concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
Three of them are unique to fracking. One is just the air pollution that results from the diesel trucks down the roads, and one of my research areas is the adverse health effects of air pollution.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly going to increase, but all of us are vulnerable to air pollution, and it's in general worse in urban areas than rural areas, and now the rural areas with the fracking are going to suffer from it disproportionately as well. But there are three major areas that are of specific concern for the fracking wells. Most people and most of the discussion has been around the chemicals that are used in the fracking process,
mm-hmm.
and how they get into our drinking water. That is a real problem. I'm not sure it's the most important of the problems, but it's a real problem. It's a problem because the character of those chemicals is proprietary, and we don't even know what they are. We know what some of them are, but each company has its own formula for the chemicals they're putting down into the deep bedrock where they're releasing the gas. The issue of whether they get into the drinking water or not is also a complicated one. A lot of the fracking wells are deep enough so they're below the groundwater, and in that regard are unlikely to contaminate groundwater. But when they go through the region where the groundwater is, that's when there's a real chance of contamination. And when they withdraw the fracking water, that's a problem. Now, what they do with that fracking water is very directly related. They use huge amounts of water to inject to break up the shale. That use of water is a problem in its own right, not so much in this part of the country, but certainly in many other parts of the country, there is not a great supply of groundwater. And water is a precious resource, and needs to be used carefully, and fracking uses huge amounts. But about 40% of what is injected is also withdrawn. after it's broken the shale. And that amount that's withdrawn is going to contain these chemicals. What's done with that water? Well, sometimes it's put into a storage facility. Often it's taken to the local wastewater treatment plant. Wastewater treatment plants are not equipped to remove the chemicals in the fracking fluid for the most part. And furthermore, there is very little regulation of wastewater treatment plants or drinking water treatment plants that is focused on these chemicals. These are new problems, and our regulations haven't caught up with them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one major area. It's the area I think people have been the most informed about. But there are two other areas that are equally and perhaps even more dangerous. Most people know that we have a problem with radon gas. Radon gas comes from the decay of radium deep in the earth, and it seeps up and enters our basements, and it's a radioactive gas, and it can cause lung cancer and other cancers, and is very dangerous. Well, the radium that gives rise to radon is not equally distributed, so there's some hot spots and there's some areas that are not very hot. Now, my basement, for example, doesn't have any radon because apparently radium isn't found in the deep rock under my house. Now, a number of the wells in Pennsylvania have been, when the water has been withdrawn, there were extraordinarily elevated levels of radium, the parent radioactive compound that generates radon. It has a long half-life. It's a very dangerous radioactive compound. It decays by alpha emission, for those that know a thing about radiation. Wastewater treatment plants, drinking water treatment plants, do not have the capability of removing radon. Radium, I mean. The radon gas is not the issue here. It's the radium element itself.
So this gets into water, for example?
It gets into water. Mm-hmm. If it's dumped into the wastewater, mm-hmm. wastewater treatment plants usually discharge into some body of water, the local stream, the local river. And often the intake for the drinking water is downstream of where the wastewater dumps. So if it's not removed when it's discharged in the wastewater, and it's not removed when that body of water that has the radioactivity in it is taken back in for drinking water treatment, then it can end up in our drinking water. And ionizing radiation is a proven cause of human cancer. Very, very dangerous. The problem here is that, number one, most people don't even know about it. Number two, there is little or no monitoring of the wells, and we know most about what's happening in Pennsylvania because that's nearby, and fracking there began in, 2007, and has grown to just an enormous number of wells, almost 5,000 wells at the present time. So you have this enormous amount of water being withdrawn from the wells. It has chemicals, but it also has radioactivity. And we have not adequate federal or state standards for dealing with it. Mm-hmm. So that's the third. The air pollution from the trucks, the chemicals in the water, the radiation in the water. The fourth one is also extremely important, and that is the escape of volatile organic chemicals. Natural gas is primarily methane. Methane is flammable. It's the major component of all natural gas. It's also toxic. It's a greenhouse gas. It's worse than carbon dioxide. But along with that methane comes xylene and toluene and benzene. Benzene, a known human carcinogen, and ethylbenzene, and a host of different organic compounds. Now, many of these are components of the natural gas that's being released by the fracking. but they escape. Now, obviously, they're trying to capture this. This is the final product, but a lot of it escapes. And the stories of these clouds of volatile organics rolling down the hillsides to encompass homes in Pennsylvania is really frightening. Now, one should say that, of course, if the system were done really properly, there should not be that escape. But the reality is that this is a major problem in fracking as we know it in Pennsylvania. Volatile organics, some of them are carcinogens. Many of them cause respiratory disease. Many of them cause heart disease. They're dangerous chemicals. And the personal stories from a number of the residents in Pennsylvania is that their life has become almost unbearable. Now, they may have made a lot of money from allowing the companies to frack on their land, but many of them are now suffering the health consequences.
Well, thank you, Dr. Carpenter. That it really is a list of very heavy-duty factors that obviously should cause concern, as the name of your organization, Concerned Health Professional, states. One question I have about the last item on the list that you mentioned, the volatile organic compounds. It's been known for a while, for example, that there are smog-like air pollution over areas of Wyoming which were wild and uninhabited, and measurements were taken that revealed that they had equivalent levels to the smog in Los Angeles, a known smog-like city, a smog-filled city. New York City, for example, which is downstream from the regions of New York State where fracking would occur, is it downwind? Is there any concern that the conditions that are in this one region would affect downstate? The reason that I ask is that very often in the dialogue and exchange in the blogosphere about this, and I have two blogs up at the moment, one on Huffington and one at Alternet about this health impacts question. But one of the things that I sometimes hear in comments is, well, the communities that receive this, may not like it, but we need to get energy somewhere, and it really will only be affecting, a few poor areas, rural areas where the people were misguided, some of the people were misguided to lease their land, and it won't have a larger it won't reach a larger population. But I always think, well, wind travels, air current travels, water travels, in some cases there are ways for water to move around. What is your feeling about whether there is a risk to the air quality of the downstate New York City or Philadelphia or other larger cities that are, kind of downwind from all of this?
Well, I can certainly guarantee you it's not going to make the air quality better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, these are volatile. They go into the air, and air currents can move them any number of places.
Mm-hmm.
Smog is formed from the volatile organics, and we have them emitted from automobiles and trucks, and that's where smog comes from in major cities, in the presence of sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on the wind direction, depending on how much is released from these wells, yes, there's a possibility. The distance to New York City is probably sufficient that it's unlikely to be a major problem there. But it's much more likely to be a problem in places like Binghamton,
mm-hmm.
Other cities that are closer to the places where the wells are.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to increase smog everywhere that the wind carries these volatile organics.
Mm-hmm. So let's shift gears here. I think you've kind of laid down, a great template for things to look at here. Let's shift gears and talk a little bit about the look at the health impacts that New York State is undertaking currently. This is just something that was initiated early in the fall of 2012, where as we have this conversation, we're kind of approaching the end of fall. At first, I think there was some sense that the Department of Health of New York State was undertaking a full health impact assessment. Maybe that was a misunderstanding on the part of the public and journalists like me, but it seems that somehow the purview of what they're actually doing has sort of shrunken since the first announcement. That's been my perception, but maybe that's not accurate. I mean, what is it that they are stated to do, and what are they doing?
Well, let me review the whole situation as I understand it. And, of course, I think none of us have really been given the information we should be given. So initially, the whole decision-making process was to be by the Department of Environmental Conservation. Now, there's some good people there, but they don't have health professionals at DEC. And so everyone was waiting for DEC to give the report, and many of us, myself included, strongly objected to having a Department of Environmental Conservation be the group that gave advice to the governor on whether fracking should be allowed in New York State, and argued that it needed to be a health group that made that decision. So then Governor Cuomo said, all right, we're going to have the Department of Health do this report. My colleagues at the Department of Health tell me that many, many people have been involved in collecting information and working toward this report, but nobody has seen this report. And again, I can speak because I worked for the Department of Health for a goodly number of years, and I know it to be a political institution.
Mm-hmm.
The Department of Health in New York State or any other state is not free from pressure from the governor's office or from the business community, and it's not free to make recommendations that are totally based on health effects. And I've used previously my own story when I was the director of the Health Department Laboratories in the early 1980s. This was under Governor Hugh Carey, so it was a while ago. But we were just discovering the danger of radon gas, and it's seeping into people's basement. Everybody knows about it now, but at that point, that was new information. And so we were initiating a program to study health effects of radon. We were ordered by the governor's office to immediately stop that program. And the reason was the governor was promoting energy conservation. So he's telling everybody to insulate their homes and trap all the heat inside the homes. Well, that would trap all the radon.
Oh, my.
So we were forced to stop a program of research that had major public health implications. And then it passed, and then finally the health department got on with it. But so I strongly objected to having the health department do that report because of the strong perception from many sources that the governor wanted to approve fracking and he was just waiting for someone to give him a justification for doing it. And so a number of us screamed and hollered that the review of the health literature should be done by an external group, not by the state health department. And as a result, what is it, 2 weeks ago, that the governor appointed an outside committee of three people to review what the health department has done. And that, of course, has never been released to the public. We don't know what they've done. We don't know what their recommendations are. I think that, in fact, that report is not even complete. Now, these three individuals, I know two of them personally, Lynn Goldman and Richard Jackson. Dr. Adgate, I don't know personally, but he's from the School of Public Health in Denver. So these are very distinguished people. Lynn Goldman used to be administrator at EPA under President Clinton. Dick Jackson used to be the director of the Center for Environmental Health at the Centers for Disease Control. And so these are good people. But the report was they were given 10 days to review all the information that the health department presented.
And 10 days?
10 days.
That is a very, I mean, that seems to me.
I think the original thing, it was due yesterday.
Really? But 10 days? Isn't that a rather short amount of time,
again,
or no?
Again, that got extended.
Mm.
So just a couple of days ago, the decision was made that no decision would be made until, I believe it was sometime in February, 90 days later.
Mm-hmm.
And while it hasn't been stated clearly, but I believe that that is to say that these individuals are given 90 days to review the health department information. Now, the real question there, because the health department's information has not been released to the public yet, for those of us that are concerned to review it and criticize it, and we also do not know what the charge is to this committee of three people. Excuse me. Is the charge only that they review what the health department has already done? Or are they given the option of doing their own investigation of what's been happening in Colorado, what's been happening in Pennsylvania, and other places in Wyoming where fracking has been going on and where there are some major horror stories for what the health impacts are?
Let me ask you a question. I think that's a very important point. And after this question, we'll go to a break for station identification. But my question is this: if these distinguished scientists, as you describe them, highly respected, they may already be aware of some of the science. They may become aware of the science that exists that you refer to, you know, that in the course of even preparing for this, perhaps. Are they supposed to, for example, could their purview be limited such that they are being asked as scientists to ignore the research that's known, that they themselves may know, and leave it at the gate in order to, you know, merely adhere to predetermined criteria as defined by the Department of Health? I mean, could that happen, or wouldn't that be unethical from a scientific perspective?
What we know is that each of them has signed a contract with the Department of Health. We don't know what's in that contract. But that contract would certainly describe either the limitations or the breadth of study that's allowed. Most contracts for this kind of thing are on the basis of this is what you will do, and this is how many hours you're allowed to do it, and then you will make a report. My suspicions, knowing how the Department of Health operates, is that it may be a fairly restricted contract for review of what the health department's already done. I would hope not. I think that these individuals are sufficiently experienced so that they would, I suspect, resist that kind of limited study. But on the other hand, these are all very, very busy people. It isn't that they can drop everything they're doing. Lynn Goldman's the dean of the School of Public Health at George Washington University. And Dr. Agate's the dean in Denver. These people aren't going to spend all of the next 3 months doing nothing but reviewing fracking reports. So I hope that we don't get just another whitewash here, but really get an in-depth review. I have the highest regard for the members of that committee. And that gives me some assurance that they won't allow themselves to be manipulated.
Well, thank you. We're going to take a break now for station identification here on Progressive Radio. And listeners, please stay with me, Allison Rose Levy, as I talk to Dr. David Carpenter on Connect the Dots on today's show. Welcome back, listeners, to Connect the Dots for the second half of the show. I'm Allison Rose Levy, here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Today, I'm speaking with David Carpenter, M.D. He's the director of the Institute for Health and the Environment at the University of Albany. He's also heading up a new group, Concerned Health Professionals of New York, which you can find online at www.concernedhealthny.org. And this is the place to go for information about the health impacts of fracking. The science is there. The health professionals are there. If you're a health professional or a health advocate, you are warmly invited to go and sign up and join and participate in their information and policy campaign. We've been talking about the health review currently planned by the New York State Department of Health to look into the health impacts of fracking if it comes to New York, as well as whether the proposed guidelines issued by the New York's Department of Environmental Conservation, the DEC, do in fact cover and protect our health. As Dr. Carpenter was telling us in the first half of the show, a very distinguished panel of leading scientists, three leading scientists, have been contracted by the Department of Health to review well, that's really the question, isn't it? It's not really certain what
that's
they are
the question
to review, because this hasn't been a very transparent process, as Dr. Carpenter has been telling us. So in the last part of the show, before we broke for the station identification, you were saying that these are leading scientists, and you trust that they, would not readily jump in to participate in a whitewash, even though, as we talked about in the first part of the show, the purview of the review is unknown. The time frame for the review is not quite clear. And further, many in the advocacy community are concerned because basically, the comment period for the proposed environmental guidelines to be issued by New York State to regulate this, as you stated and many others have said, highly unregulated process, have been issued for public comment prior to the release of the health review. And the comment period will open up, I think, in another week or so, depending on when this show airs. It's slated to open up in mid-December, minus any health review. And in addition, another question, which is a little outside of your purview, I realize, Dr. Carpenter, but which is of some concern, is that the general public and many specialists in different areas that you mentioned in the earlier part of the show as being part of our whole health fabric, health, environment, socioeconomics, many experts in those and in geology and other areas did make learned comments, appended scientific research, did all kinds of forms of analyses. Some public comments were just, more general concern, and some were quite professional and specific.
Quite technical, yes.
Yeah, quite technical. In the 67,000 comments that were made upon the draft guidelines, and apparently they remain unchanged despite all of this comment. And so, there hasn't been in the year since the comment period closed and in response to the first draft of, or second draft it actually was, of these guidelines. Now that the guidelines are now, opened up for comment again, they recently, just in this last week, have been re-released, and there represents not only about three words of change.
Hardly any change at all. And this, of course, does not generate any confidence in the public or in the concerned scientific community that people are paying any attention to the concerns that are being expressed by all of us.
Right. And so, so on the one hand, some people, first when the health review was announced, were going, oh, well, this is great. But now, there's more and more concern. I mean, in the existing guidelines, what concern, what analysis, what planning, what analysis of risk concerning health is present in the existing guidelines as they stand today prior to the health review?
Well, I can't really answer that. I haven't gone through them carefully myself.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think we did have a meeting with representatives of the governor's office, with the DEC and the DOH, and raised these issues, the chemicals in the water, the radiation in the water, the volatile organics, the increase in air pollution. And certainly the people from the governor's office and the state agencies know about these concerns.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Mm-hmm. That's good, but, my sense at the close of that meeting was that these people were a bit bored and felt this was a waste of their time because it wasn't anything they didn't already know. What does that mean? Well, does that mean that those concerns are being basically disregarded? From my perspective as a public health physician, those concerns are major concerns for human health.
Indeed.
And to push something for the sake of economic development and jobs, and those are important, I understand, but to push for those while ignoring the adverse health effects, when there is certainly the possibility of technological developments, we can find the ways of getting radiation out of wastewater. It probably is going to cost a lot of money, but we can develop those. We can develop federal and state standards for the presence of chemicals in wastewater and in drinking water. We can't do it today or tomorrow, but we can do that. We can improve the technology so that we don't lose a lot of these volatile organics that are, first of all, that's the product that's so valuable, the natural gas, and it doesn't benefit anybody if they escape and pollute the neighborhood. So I think the issues are not unsolvable ones, but if you look at the experience in Colorado, where there was just this recent study on volatile organics, and the results of the studies in Pennsylvania, where all of these factors have been investigated, and where there seems to be serious health impacts on the local population, we don't need that in New York. And so from my perspective, we simply should not be going forward with this technology, even though it is economically a good thing and will create some jobs, but it will also create illness. And what we should be doing is aggressively developing technology to reduce the risk of harm.
That makes sense. Now, why is that not happening? Is it a question of who has to pay the freight for that? Because, on whom should fall that responsibility, and who has the wherewithal to pay for and compel that?
Well, it is who's going to pay the freight. There's no question about that. Mm-hmm. And, at the moment, this is sort of being left to the states. So Pennsylvania decided in 2007 to go forward. New York has yet to decide to go forward. The federal government certainly should be involved. Apparently, fracking is ongoing in something like 27 states, if I recall correctly. Some states are booming economically, North Dakota being the most obvious example, Wyoming, and these are sparsely populated states that didn't have a lot of industry, and so economically they're benefiting. But they're suffering from health effects. Someone really needs to work. I have great confidence in American ingenuity when it comes to technology. When we have a problem, we can usually solve it. You can't solve complex problems immediately, however. Mm-hmm. You've got to study them. You've got to develop new methods of doing things. And until we have those methods, let's not rush into this in New York. That natural gas is not going to go away. It will be there for the future. But let's not compromise the health of the public in the short term just for immediate economic considerations.
Well, that makes sense. I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I guess my question is, on the economic side, and in fact, I'm currently researching a blog and have had a previous guest on here in Connect the Dots, Deborah Rogers, who is an economic and financial analyst, who talks about what she calls fracconomics, the real economics of fracking. And listeners can go into the archives and listen to that show, and or you can follow me on Alternet and Huffington and my blog, healthjournalistblog.com, where I'm currently putting together a blog on that topic. And the economics aren't what they're cracked up to be, because in a non-populated area, as you mentioned, far out west, versus an area, you know, a state like New York, which has a lot of agriculture, tourism industry, you know, and a whole different water aquifers, a whole different population mix. In fact, you know, it's not just a big desert in which, well, we did it and it was a plus because nothing was going on here. In fact, this is a choice between different pathways for economic development, and maybe not even the best one. In fact, very likely not the best one. But I wanted to go back to something that you had said in an earlier part of the show when you were talking about your years at the Department of Health, which is really great insider knowledge. You said that that department is subject to political influence, and you were speaking about a time over 20 years ago, you know, compared to today's climate where the reaches of economic influence into public infrastructures and to elected officials and others is, you know, has accelerated or progressed far more than it was at that time. You know, where is the impetus to proceed without these sort of, you know, undoing the safety brake and going full force into something that, you know, that has all of these unknown outcomes without a proper system of checks? I know this is not your area of expertise, but is that political? Is it, are there pressures being brought to bear on the deciders at different levels on this?
Well, my conclusion on that is absolutely yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think in a case like this, the decision rests directly with the governor. The governor makes his decisions. This governor makes his decisions and wants to have people follow through. I'm sure that the commissioner of health, the commissioner of environmental conservation have a pretty good understanding of what the governor wants. And, you know, I'm not saying that they always compromise standards. That's not the case at all. But they work for the governor, mm-hmm. and the governor has got some major problems on his hands. Post Sandy, the economic situation in New York is even worse than it has been before.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I come only from the health side. I'm not part of the political establishment, so it, you know, my view on these things isn't the whole picture. I understand that. But I think it's my responsibility as a public health professional that doesn't, I mean, I'm at the state university, but I have a much freer hand to say what I think from an academic position, even though it's a state university, than I would have had I worked, if I still worked for the Department of Health, the Department of Environmental Conservation. That's why it's so important that the recommendation on the health aspect come from someone that doesn't directly report to the governor's office. Now, I'm not criticizing the governor at all. I think he's been a good governor. He's been a good leader. But, you know, he's drawn in different ways by virtue of his necessity of dealing with the economics of the state. And the health is only one part of that story. Mm-hmm. But from my perspective, it's the most important part.
Mm-hmm.
If we sacrifice the health of the public just to make a few bucks in the short term, that's not a good investment.
I think that's a very persuasive statement there, Dr. Carpenter. Thank you. You know, yeah, that really... that makes a lot of sense, but let me just go into something implied and just, you know, in your statement and just bring it out a little bit for our listeners, which is, you know, by the fact that this review is not being done transparently, is not independent, they're not reporting directly to the governor, they're reporting to the Department of Health, which, as you point out, reports to the governor. So therefore, this is not, even in under the best of circumstances, an independent review. And what you have just made clear is why, to really get an accurate picture, it should have been an independent review optimally. Is that so?
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's shift gears here, because I just want to, I really thank you for your comments, and I hope, I know that our audience here on Progressive Radio is very health-oriented audience, and I also know that a lot of health care professionals tune into this and other programs on Progressive Radio Network, because, you know, the network is headed by one of our leading, if not the leading, health advocate for the last 30 years, Gary Null. So let me just, you know, you've created something. What about the healthcare professionals? Now, you, I understand, are a public health official and academic, you know, or past official and an academic. You know, usually most practitioners, most people who are physicians like you, direct their practice toward, you know, clinical treatment. Is there a disconnect that concerned health professionals of New York is trying to heal between clinicians who kind of deal with problems of individuals when they arise, and the larger public health context that either creates those problems, which we are clearly at risk for, or takes wise protective action and prevents those problems, which is what your organization is aiming toward? Can you speak to us a little bit about that? Because I'm hoping to enlist some people to sign up with you.
Well, you raise a very, very important question. There's always a certain antagonism between the medical care community and the public health community. And I think it's natural, and it's not, again, to criticize them. But the way our healthcare system is set up, physicians don't make any money by making people healthy. They make money when people are sick. Fracking is going to increase their business considerably. And, you know, physicians are really not trained specifically in disease prevention. Now, of course, all responsible physicians try to get their patients to stop smoking and stop drinking too much and practice safe sex and all of that sort of thing. But they're not experts in environmental threats to health, and therefore we need to have more environmental medicine taught in medical schools. It's hardly taught at all. It's only taught in the context of occupational health. So it's very important that practicing physicians learn about the health concerns that we have. And that's one of the reasons why this group was formed, why we have a very active website. You can't expect a practicing physician especially in these smaller rural communities where the fracking is ongoing, to be very knowledgeable about the health effects of air pollution, of chemicals in the drinking water, of radiation. But that's one of our functions, is to try to provide a source of information that's credible, that is accurate, that will improve their understanding of the issues around the health outcomes that come from this practice, if it goes forward.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I've heard from Pennsylvania, which I'd love to hear your comment on, is, you know, somebody will be experiencing a certain symptom picture, rashes, difficulty breathing, some digestive problems, headaches. You know, there's a certain range of symptoms that are often reported, you know, due to these, or, you know, in the environment of these exposures. But, you know, would the average physician know what they were seeing if patients present with these symptoms? And secondly, what resources would they, or treatments would they have available for that?
Well, I think the answer is that most physicians, if they have a patient coming in complaining about headaches and shortness of breath and rashes and so forth, they probably pass it off as being a psychological disorder and nothing really physical, because on a physical exam often you wouldn't find anything particularly. And this is one of the real problems, because many of the symptoms from inhaling the organic chemicals particularly are just those that we've mentioned. They're headaches. They're a general feeling of ill health, but on a physical examination, you wouldn't find very much. And there is a great tendency when patients appear in a physician's office with those kinds of symptoms to either send them to a psychiatrist or to give them a pill of some sort just to be doing something, but to basically pass it off as not being a real disease. Unfortunately, those are the most common symptoms that people that live in these areas seem to be showing. Now, I don't mean to say that never is there a psychological component, but I think in the majority of cases, these are real illnesses. These are people that, often they're people that actually signed the leases, but other times they're just people that live in the area and don't even own property and are being adversely affected by the fracking process. So it is a very difficult situation, and the medical community is really not well positioned to know what to deal with it.
Would you describe the symptom picture that you just mentioned for our listeners? Would you describe that as being, you know, just a kind of minor fleeting symptoms that go away, or can these be the marker for later development or progressive development of more serious disease, for example?
Well, they certainly can be the marker of more serious disease. Mm-hmm. And the issue in the personal reports, and again, this has not really been done rigorously or scientifically, but the personal reports are that people have these symptoms of headaches and lethargy and fatigue and a feeling of general ill-ease. And then if they travel somewhere else for a week, those signs and symptoms go away.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that people are living in these areas where the fracking operates 24/7, day and night, and they're exposed constantly. So there's no relief from those symptoms. They may get worse when there's a particularly dense cloud of organic gases, but they never really go away because they're exposed continuously. Mm-hmm. That can lead to the more serious diseases, cancer, respiratory, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, things like that, because of the continued exposure to dangerous chemicals.
Thank you so much, Dr. Carpenter, for being with me and our listeners today. And I just want to urge anyone who is a healthcare professional, please sign up at the website for Dr. Carpenter's organization, Concerned Health New York. That's concernedhealthny.org. You can sign up as either an advocate, someone concerned about health, or as a professional. And listeners, please bring this to the attention of your practitioners wherever you are, and they don't only have to be MDs. It could be nurses. It could be any kind of health practitioner to strengthen the work of defending health that this organization led by Dr. Carpenter is doing. Thank you so much for being on Connect the Dots with me today. Just so appreciate the work you're doing, Dr. Carpenter.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And I just also want to point listeners to a very abbreviated action. There's a film now circulating called Dear Governor Cuomo, and I just happened to see it a couple of days ago. It's really terrific. It has some great concert footage in it by Natalie Merchant and other people. It kind of lays out the story of fracking and what all of us as citizens can do to protect our state, our food, our water, our air. If you're on Facebook, you can look at it. You find it there. They have a page, Dear Governor Cuomo, and see it. It's going to be touring all around New York State. Make sure to see it when it comes to your area. And also make sure to come back and tune in again next week for Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy. We're with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks for listening.